But now, tell me, the times, Kit, remind me, when were you there? What years were you working?
I started in Swiftbrook in 1947, and I was on the forestry, and I came home, and it was Dave Hennessy's father came down, and he said, "Kit, go up in the morning, there's a job up there, stand at the checking office." And the boss would come out, you know, that's the way you were employed, you know.
I think he had a job in Swift, right?
Oh, yeah, sure, yeah.
That was pennies from heaven, wasn't
it? Yeah, yeah.
And were you in there, Dick, at the same time, or?
No.
What were your years?
1950.
Oh, yes. Yeah. So you were a couple of years later.
Yes,
yeah. Yeah.
But, Kit, you were in just after the war.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
and,
yeah.
During the war, how difficult was
it? I think it was very difficult during the war. See, the scrap paper used to come out, and there'd be books, you know, all sorts of books. And there was about, I think, 7 or 8 young lads employed taking covers off books and that, you know, in the shed.
That's right.
My father was the foreman over them. And like it was, and then when that stopped, they were all let go, you know.
Explain now, taking
the covers off the hard that couldn't be used, you know.
And there, you were recycling that.
And they were recycling the paper, but the hard covers could be scrapped, probably sent to a dump somewhere or burnt, you know.
Yeah.
But that's...
where were the books coming in from?
Waste from all over the city, I suppose, you know.
Yeah.
Do you remember that time, the Boy Scouts and groups, they used to save waste paper and they'd sell it. Yeah. Do you remember that in the boys?
That was before me going into it, you know. When I went in, there was none of that, you know. The real troublesome thing they were doing when I started there was number 2 machine never worked on it, making stamp paper for postage stamps. I think it went to England to be printed, you know. But the stamp man would be out from the GPO and the dandy had come out, you know. And the dandy had all these little Irish E's on it.
Yeah.
That's the dandy that inserted that
watermark.
I see. Yes, the watermark. And that was very special paper. Do you know?
Your number 2 machine. Some nights they'd only make one reel. We keep getting scrapped. You know, it had to be dead on all the time. You know, and they didn't go very fast. But they gave up that order. Went to England anyhow. Eventually, it was too much bother.
Now, was there a period when you had apprenticeship? How were you learning the trade, so to speak?
I started in the field, pulling weeds. But then you're in the shed, and when somebody is maybe leaves the place, or somebody gets promoted from the glaze room, that's where you'd go on the cutters or the calendars, you know. And then you'd be there, and you'd end up going up the machine, you know, to the paper making. But the first time I was asked to go up the machine, I wouldn't go. As a backtender, you know, a helper to the machine man.
And why didn't you?
Because it was too busy a place. You know? I was on a calendar, you know, and I could never see myself being able to manage. You know, I hadn't the confidence.
Really?
But anyhow, when I was asked, I think it was a year or two later, my first cousin was the machine man. And he comes down to me and says, "Kit, they're going to ask you again to up the machine. And come up, because he says you'll be with me." So that was a great start, you know, because Brendan and myself were great friends, you know. He was my first cousin as well.
What was his name?
Brendan O'Neill.
Yeah.
Yeah. He was from next door, although he was married at this time. But O'Neill's, this family were just from next door here.
Okay.
Would have been going up as a helper to the machine. Yeah. But back then, though, we were called, you know.
But taking that position as, helping a machine man would have upped your wages.
Oh, yeah, your wages would increase, but not a terrible lot.
What kind of money were you getting?
When the mill shut, I was a machine man. And I was earning £30 and sixpence a week. That's before getting taxed, you know.
£30.
Oh, it was great money. Sure, when I went to the Electron, the engineer asked me, "What was I earning in my last job?" And I told him, he said, "We won't be able to do as good as that." And didn't he give me, I forget what he gave me, but the fitters and all in the mill weren't getting as much, right? And the fitters down there weren't.
That was always a bone of contention in the mill.
Yeah.
The machine men.
Yeah.
The machine men were always treated
We got merit money. Merit when you were a machine man, not the helper now, but the machine man got merit money.
No one ever knew.
Oh, yeah. But it was just so much an hour, like, you know.
I know in 55 I was earning 7 guineas a week.
Okay, and you must tell me about the fitters then. What were your wages?
7 guineas. 7 £7.07 for shift work.
Yeah, that's what I was getting when I got married.
In 55.
I was only here getting £7 a week, £7, you know, a week.
Oh, I see.
Doing shift work.
But it was a good job to have at the time. And did you find that when you came from the forestry?
It was only the man in the forestry gave me man's pay. I was only 19 at the time, right? And he asked me who I was, the forester, and he knew me brother, you see. So I said who I was, and he said, "What age are you?" I said, I remember saying it to him, "I'm 19 and a half."
And who was the forester now?
Oh, God, I can't remember his name. He was a Cork man, anyhow. And he was a very nice man, but he said, if somebody came in there and asked you your age, what would you say? Well, I said, I'd have to say the same as I'm saying to you, wouldn't I? Well, he said, if anybody comes in there and asks you your age, you're over 21. You're tall enough to pass. The wages are too small. And the wages for men was £3.50.
Oh, I see.
At the time. That was man's wages on the forestry, you know.
That was before 1947.
Oh, yeah.
So where was the forest?
Oh, well, we just up the road, it was a nursery at the time. You know, just up the Castle Road before you get to Britis. You know, halfway between here and Britis.
So your time then in the forest for the...
I wasn't long in it.
Yeah. Were there a lot of people working?
Oh, well, when I went into the forestry, there was a gang of lads after me and implied, because they were getting in loads of young trees, you know, this size.
Yeah.
And we were planting them in beds. That's what we were doing. And then when we had that done, we were up on Seacon Mountain doing fencing and that sort of thing, you know.
And
up over Talladega.
This was a government initiative.
Oh,
at
that was
time.
That was
to,
a government
to,
job,
yes,
yeah.
To
yeah,
grow
the forestry.
Grow the forestry, yeah.
And Japanese trees come in, plants, and they're only that size. And the clay was wet. And there was a chap in Ard, rest him, he's dead. He was a big gangly lad. He says, "Has anybody seen me and I taking the trees from under me nails?" You know. Planting, there was a whole row, like a line up the field. It was the nursery, like.
Yeah.
You lad on each end of the line, and then there were so many, and each lad had a spade and a fork. And you built up a little bank along the line, and you went along down on your knees and you stuck the young trees to it, you know, with a bit of clay. And then you got up and you dug the next strip, you know, on it. That's the way it was done.
And did you cover many acres?
Oh, I know. You wouldn't be doing all that much, do you know? No. I don't know how many acres the trees would do when they grow now, do you know?
Watch them growing?
No, because I wasn't on it. I was only on the forestry, I'd say, like for early spring until August, and then I went into the mill.
Yeah.
And I didn't like leaving the forest, to tell you the truth, because I loved it, you know. I loved up there.
The outdoor.
Yeah, and up on Seacon, you know, up on the mountain there.
But you know the countryside is covered in spruce.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
And so they're mostly spruce.
Yeah, I'd say it was, yeah.
And
yeah.
Was that timber then suitable for the pub?
No. It probably was, because when we were brought down to Clondalkin when they bought up here, we got tours in our turns, and we were looking at the lads at the wood pulp.
Yeah.
Geez, such and a job.
The
worst thing. It was like two ovens, wasn't it? A big oven here and one here. They were up on the platform, and the timber was coming in on wheels,
mm-hmm.
and they were all logs that length and about that in diameter, and they were already skint, you know, the bark was gone off them.
Okay, so they were only 6 inches in diameter then,
That I'd say, yeah. And
that
these lads working here, they were up on a platform, and the trees came in a thing that it kept, as far as they used the timber, it kept rising, or whether to press the button or anyhow, they opened that door and the stuff would be coming, because it's a big grinding stone, I think, that was in it that ground the timber up, and the stuff would be splashing out at them, and they'd fill it as quick as like shut the door, and then they'd have to go back and that's the way they were going. I think they only did 2 hours on and so long off, do you know?
Oh, it was all hands-on
work. Oh, yeah, it was dreadful, dreadful work. I wouldn't have worked that.
Did you see that happening, Dick?
No.
Did you not?
No.
And so that's
interesting. They couldn't stop the work. They had a four-shift system because they couldn't stop.
Yeah.
If they stopped for the weekend, it would be half a week trying to get the pulp going again, the machine.
Yeah.
So they were working all the time. It was going on.
That was a success, you know? Tommy, was it?
No, I don't think it was that successful. No,
it was
no.
The first section of the mill to close down.
Was it? I wouldn't.
Trying to make their own pulp. Was that it?
Somebody told me that the lads that worked on it, all they did was go up and back horses and have a drink and go back to work. You know, and dead. It was an awful job.
Yeah. And did you find though that the you know, working around the clock day and night? I mean, was like. So you were on different shifts?
You'd get used to it, yeah. You'd never get used to it
eat-wise.
Oh, well, I wasn't too bad so long as I was let eat Jordan Lent.
But, you know, you have your dinner at... if you're on night shift, you have a dinner at one time. The following week you're on early shifts, you have a dinner at a different time, so... You were all over the place, which I'm sure Betty was well aware of, being the cook.
And would you have taken a basket with you to London?
Oh, yeah, everybody working the mill had a little bag, maybe a bag belonging to their older sisters or something, you know, carrying their milk and their lunch in.
Yeah.
Do you know? That was it. Even in one of the photographs, you see a bag on the bench in the machine room. That's one of the lads' lunch bag, you know. It wouldn't be a fancy box or anything like that. Any bag at all.
You're talking about the place being happy. Between number one, we say number one machine and number two machine in the mill, they came to a certain area and there was a big open space, there was a huge table where the lads would have their tea, their break. Lord of Mercy and Jack Brett.
Yeah.
One of the great funniest things that ever happened was, that used to happen then, was you'd be making the tea or doing something and you'd have your cup on the table and fill your tea, and some lads would come and they'd put a nail down through the cup. They could bore the cup and they'd nail the cup to the table.
Yeah.
And poor Jack,
that's a trick in my
poor Jack
would come
down to have his cup of tea, and of course
a terrible lad of trick. And
the next thing, the cup would break in 2 hours.
I threw a bag of water at a lad one day, and it was one of those lovely fine brown paper bags, and it was half full, you know, and you just keep swinging it, you know, because if you did that, it would tear. And Tony McDermott and Frank Pitts are loading the cutter down just a few yards from me, and they're rather pushing back the heist, and the bag went down and it hit the heist chain first, and it didn't burst, and it went around the thing like that and landed on Tony McDermott's neck there. Yeah, you know, so, tricks and tricking all the. There was an awful lot of tricking that night, you know, on the night shift.
Yeah. So I suppose that's what kept you going, really, wasn't it?
Yeah. It was happy enough in that respect, yes.
But was there. To talk about paper itself, Swiftbrook was renowned for the quality.
It was the only mill in the country like that made. Quality
paper.
That was
paper, the name of the game. You know. Shiftbrook was a quality paper.
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
And the watermarks, you have samples of the watermarks here. And there's one, you know, the Roman Tower with the Wolfhound in front of it. Yeah. Was that, I remember that. I remember that paper.
Well, we used to dance above in Blessington, and we were all standing around the door, and the parish priest up there was the man that was in charge of it all, you know. And he came in, where are you from? I'm from Sagard. He says, the paper mill is down there. He says, they make lovely ancient Irish vellum. I love writing letters.
and that process to get that vellum.
It'd be all different mixes of it, you know. It's the men up on the beaten loft that were really making the paper, you know.
Was there a skill in that?
Oh, I'd say, yeah. Oh, and the colour, getting the colour right, you know.
That on a sloppy one. The lads used to do it on purpose. The lads and the beaters.
Yeah.
They'd mix the stuff in such a way that when they come down, you're in trouble all night. Yeah. The paper would break. It'd be breaking on the machine, you know.
Yeah.
Which meant there was a lot of broke, which meant a lot of waste paper had to be carried.
Had to be carried back up to the sheds, you know. The shavings off the cutter.
Oh, what happened to that waste then?
It was reused.
Oh, reused again.
So much of it put in different mixes, you know. They wouldn't be using it all the time, you know.
Yeah.
But when I worked in one part, but when I went to, I worked up in the beaten loft before I went to the glaze room. I was forgetting that. And I worked in what was called a piggery. It was down down under the breakers that broke up the rags, the machine. We were down under it. And the rags were broke up, and then they were let down. And this is all apartments like for drainage. So the rags only come down to one place. So my job then, there's three of us worked at it on the three shifts, forking it from one to the other, the rag, the wet rag, that's being pulled up. And then they'd fill it into a box and the lads up in the beaten loft to take it up. Maybe it'd be only a couple of forks that had to go into a mix, you know. That was in my time. But in the old days, I think it was all rag.
And would you get, was that... physically, you'd have to be very strong to do that.
You'd have to be you'd have to work, yeah. You'd be forking it from one of these things that were walls, you know, and the floors were all drains.
Yeah.
You know, the water would be draining out of them. And you just pitched it from one to the other to make room for the next stock coming down. Because the lads wouldn't be using it quick enough up in the beaten loft, you know.
And when you were forking it over, there was somebody else there to carry it again, was there?
No, you got it over the wall and forked it down to the next one, you know, out of the way, just maybe only one or two, you know, just keep it out of the way, that's all.
Yeah.
And then you fill this thing on wheels and it was taken up on a hoist and the lads used it up there.
So was it a dirty job?
No, it was wet and that. No, the rags would be only wet. They wouldn't be sticky or ranting like that, you know. Yeah. But I tell you, like, when you were in the machine room, your trousers would be full of splashes of paper, you know, they'd stick to your trousers or that, but apart from that, you'd be wet all right, but that's all.
Yeah, yeah.
Very warm.
Yeah. Very warm, yeah.
From the cylinders, you see, to dry the paper.
Yeah.
The heat was unbearable nearly at times, especially in the summertime.
Yeah, it was fairly hot. Very especially hot. On number two machine, they had the fans at the end of the machine were covered with a hood, you know.
And
door at each end, and when you were lacing, bringing the paper down through it, you had to go down with it, you know. Although you didn't handle it, it went with the tape, but you had to go follow it, you know, to make sure it wouldn't come loose or anything.
Yeah.